Most people listen to it on Spotify or something. Welcome, friends and family. What season are we on? 300?
Yeah, I don't know. I lost track.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
It's getting out of hand. It's getting out of hand. It's a running joke we got. It's usually just a random number at this point.
Yeah.
So today we got another guest, Megan Rohde.
Yeah.
Yes. Wife, mother, athlete, PT. Hopefully those are in somewhat of a good order. But so we figured today, I guess the conversation is going to somewhat revolve around injury and how to work around them, what it does to our mindset, what it does to our body, how it affects your day-to-day, how it affects your training as an athlete, and just kind of all the things that come wrapped up in, you know, getting hurt. And is that the same thing
right
as we were just talking?
Yeah.
What do you guys think? Maybe that's a good jumping off point. Getting hurt, getting injured, same, different.
I think there's a range of injuries. I think it was Kelly Starrett said, like, it was somebody saying that an injury is something that prevents you from doing your day-to-day life, whereas it's like a tweak or a twinge or something like that is something that's more like a nuisance, and it's like your first warning sign, like you need to take care of something. So it's not saying you need to work through it, but it's not debilitating.
Yeah.
So
I really like Kelly Starrett's take on pain, as he basically says pain is just a communicator. It doesn't necessarily have a value of good or bad. It's a message that you need to, like, address.
Right.
And yeah, I think an injury is, to me, in my mind, is like a very concrete thing. Like, there's a diagnosed something happened, right? Where if you're hurting or you are hurt, it might just be pain because you're not doing what you should do for mobility, or you're overdoing one movement versus the other, an imbalance type stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and something can be inflamed or,
yeah.
But I don't know. You're the PT.
Are we on the right road here?
Yeah, no, I think you are. I think so. Pain is really interesting because it's actually an emotion.
Mm.
So
go on.
Okay. it's a perception. So, like, whatever hurts me might not hurt you, and vice versa. And it's our, you know, Kelly, I think I love Kelly. I have a little, like, FOMO and jealousy with Kelly because he and I have been practicing about the same period of time. And I'm like, oh, I wish I'd come up with all the awesome stuff that he had done.
Yeah.
But thank you for, like, being the first PT to get into the CrossFit world. So Kelly, if you ever listen to this, thank you. I think that when we have pain, it is our body's way of saying, okay, something's not right, we need to make an adjustment. But depending on who the person is, there's a lot of things that might come up with that. So, you know, like, I think in the CrossFit world, we end up seeing a lot of people who are, like, former Division I athletes or gymnasts or weekend warriors, and maybe they had an old injury, and if they start to feel that again, then, like, there's beliefs that are associated with that. So, like, I can think of a client that I had a long time ago that she injured her back, like, in a car accident or something like that, and someone somewhere along the line told her that she should never deadlift again. Well, that's just horrible advice, because you have to deadlift groceries, you need to pick things up off the floor. And so here she is in her mid-40s, and she's terrified to bend over and terrified to lift anything. And then she joins a CrossFit gym and wants to get strong. And how often do we deadlift? We deadlift when we clean, when we snatch. You know, today's workout had dumbbell stretch press. You had to deadlift those dumbbells up, right, to get them where
yeah.
you need it. So you're constantly doing that. So then that pain, whether or not it's I don't want to say real because it's real for that person, but it goes along with that mindset that I'm going to hurt myself. And so then it becomes fear.
Mm.
And then we become afraid and start avoiding things that are in everyday life. So I think that's how I would classify injury too. But where the question, are you hurt or are you injured, I think really stems around like, what emotion are you feeling? Are you scared? Are you afraid it's going to get worse? Did it just surprise you? Can you change your position or change your posture and maybe work through it? And if not, okay, then we need to choose something else. But pain is at the chemical level more of an emotion than it is anything else.
Mm-hmm. And to what I'm hearing is like there's, you know, maybe this isn't completely accurate, but like that trauma response that sticks with the perception of how a thing feels, even if it's not necessarily reflective of like reality on that day, they have these like, you know, memories that are triggering things.
Yeah.
And even so that reminds me of, so like my knee, I had like some knee pain, for a long time, like maybe 2-3 years. And then I finally went and saw a PT for it. And it was crazy because what was happening is I wasn't using my quad correctly because I was afraid when I used it, it would cause pain. And so I started squatting kind of like incorrectly out of like fear that it would hurt and pain. And my body just like started firing muscles incorrectly. So actually what fixed it is doing things that isolated the quad in the exact way that I was like afraid of using it. So like I had to do like pistols with my heel elevated and like Spanish squats and like all these things that were very like quad dominant, and that actually made it feel better, even though that's what I had been avoiding for years.
Mm. So, it's like vicious cycle too, because those like compensatory movement patterns are eventually going to lead to a different issue.
Yeah.
You
know,
there's a study, I think it's by Cholowicki. I can see it right now. I think it's from 2015. They took like 30 or 40 people and set them up in this contraption that like kind of locked their lower body out of the equation. So they just had to rely on their core, and hooked up electrodes, like a TENS unit basically, to their core muscles, and turned up the TENS high enough that it would elicit a painful response if you've ever used a TENS unit or a neuromuscular stim unit and had it just a little bit too much, like it's painful. And then they measured the electromyographic activity of the muscles, and it showed that when pain was elicited, muscles actually fired differently. So your body figures, it's so freaking smart, like it figures out how to move differently when you're in pain. And just like you said, that's not the motor pattern that you want, but it doesn't hurt. So then that fear goes away and you're like, oh, but I can do this thing now. And then you start moving in a different motor pattern, and then I don't think you have this problem anymore, but then you need to squat with your heels up for the next 10 years because that's what you, you know, that's how you figured out how to make it happen, rather than changing the motor pattern, getting the pain under control, working through the essential trauma response that's happening, and then learning how to move better.
Mm.
Otherwise, it is just that vicious cycle.
Mm. And a lot of times, I'm sure, I see this as a coach, like hands-on every day, and I'm sure you see that in your practice, is like a lot of times people are like trying to treat the symptom of something, but they're never like, oh, my hip's hurting me.
Mm-hmm.
So like they're just like mashing their hip over and over, but they're like, oh, it doesn't feel better. But like the root of that is like their QL is screwed up or something, you know?
Right. And leave your damn hip alone and
yeah,
they'll probably calm down.
Right. And it's just like all the time, that's kind of the thing, is like they look at the symptom of where they feel it and think that's always the root, and those two things aren't always the same, right?
Absolutely. I think that's human nature though. Like this thing hurts, and if I Google soft tissue, like help my soft tissue, I'm gonna get lacrosse balls and, you know, handheld little Theraguns, and I'm gonna just go right into that, and it might temporarily make it feel better, but then they keep moving the way that they've been moving, and whatever the thing is, you know, if it's the hip or the shoulder, ends up continuing to be irritated by how they're moving. So if you don't ever correct the movement pattern, then it's just going to keep on perpetuating itself.
Mm-hmm. We've been like hammering the past couple podcast episodes about like movement quality first and like building structural balance, and this just gives semblance to all that. Is like that really is the root of all like longevity and fitness, is like having quality movement.
And I've noticed just by like working with a PT, like for my wrist, it's not that they're it was actually weakness in like one side of my forearm or my grip that was causing pain in the wrist. So it's like weakness, instead of just avoiding it, which a lot of people do when they're hurt, they just rest it. Whereas it might be the case where it needs to be worked.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's weak, so
absolutely.
That was a surprise to me too.
That like weakness, tightness, pain, like I think
all
those
related.
Things all like kind of for some people feel the same. It's like indistinguishable sometimes.
Yeah.
Well, and I think when I work with patients and I'm dealing with like a short and tight muscle versus a long and weak muscle, if I can, I'll dig out my phone and pull up an anatomy chart of wherever we're looking and kind of walk them through the mechanics of how this has to work. We'll take shoulder issues because I think you got a nagging kind of shoulder thing every once in a while. So if your pec is tight, it's going to pull that whole shoulder girdle forward. And then your lower trap and your rhomboids are going to lengthen. And then the pec's going to try and take over for what other muscles should start doing. So that's where your faulty movement pattern comes in. Well, just because a muscle is short and tight doesn't mean it's strong, because it can't actually go through that whole length tension relationship. And, you know, if we lengthen a muscle right before we contract it, then we're going to get that maximum voluntary contraction from that muscle. Same thing if a muscle is long and weak, it's already too elongated. So it's like, I don't know what to do from here. I don't have any strength in this position. So if you reposition and then ask the muscle to do what it needs to do, it'll take some time because you're programming a brain muscle connection, not necessarily like a muscle fiber issue. That seems to help, but it takes time. So even in PT, you know, like I had a cash-based practice for a while and I'm starting that again, but right now I'm teaching in a PT program. It's really hard to get people to realize when they come into PT that, yes, I can probably help you in 3 or 4 visits, but I really need those 3 or 4 visits. I can't help you in 2, and it's not going to be a 1-week thing. You might feel better when you leave, but it's a process, just like learning how to do any kind of movement pattern or, you know, learning how to do CrossFit. It takes time.
Yeah. So as far as, so like you had a pretty serious injury
<great.
laughs> outside of the gym. So maybe we can kind of shift gears and talk about that and how it affect you and what's your path forward now after going through something.
Oh goodness. Well, it was, I think it was a little message from the universe to kind of put me in timeout.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd been competing for years. I competed in Olympic weightlifting, took a little break when we had our son, got back into it pretty quickly, and then started competing in CrossFit. And I like being a master's athlete because, you know, you can be old and still do cool stuff. And I was having a lot of fun. I had a great training team that I worked with in Phoenix. And then, you know, when we moved here this summer, the gym was just, this is what I love about CrossFit. Like, you walk into a CrossFit gym, it's like instant community. So I felt like I had all that. And I've been working with my coach out in San Diego, and we had kind of decided to shift from competing in CrossFit to back to Olympic weightlifting, because I really, really missed that. And actually, the day after I got my new programming cycle to start Olympic weightlifting, our son and I were on our way to go pick up our dog from my in-law's house. He had been there while we were on vacation. And it was snowing because we live in New England, and apparently it does it a lot here. And I lost control of my car. We hit another car head-on at about 35 miles an hour. Miraculously, my son is fine. Like, he... nothing was wrong with him at all. And ironically, I had done a lot of handstand push-ups that morning. And so when I went to the hospital, which I wouldn't have gone had Forrest not told me to go. I called him, and he was like, what happened again? And I told him, and he said, and is there an ambulance there? And I was like, no, I think I'm fine. I just need somebody to come pick me up. And he was like, no, you're not fine. You need to go to the hospital. And so I ended up going. I had a concussion. And they kept asking me if my neck was sore. And like a true CrossFitter, I guess, I was like, you know, that's kind of relative because I did some handstand push-up stuff today. And, you know, I'm a little sore and I've been on Christmas break, so I don't know. And so one of my friends came and picked us up and took us home. And another friend who's a PT came over the next day. And I told her, you know, kind of what had happened. And she was like, yeah, I'm not touching your neck. You need to go get x-rays. So the emergency room never did any x-rays. And I was too out of it having my nifty little concussion to even ask them. But there's a set of criteria to get cervical films called the Canadian C-spine rules, and I fit every single one of those criteria, and they didn't do x-rays. So I went the next day and got x-rays taken. They put me in a collar because I had some instability in a couple of my segments in my spine, and said, you need an MRI. I was like, okay. And I, like, again, we moved here from Phoenix. I'm used to, like, big city. Okay, the MRI machine's up and running. Like, let's just go do that. Well, now I live in Milford, New Hampshire, and I was closing down the urgent care. And the nearest MRI was in Nashua, and it wasn't open until Sunday morning. And they said, you can be admitted and get your MRI done in the morning, or you can, you know, have somebody drive you. And I was like, well, I'm not going to go spend the night at a hospital just to wait for MRI. So my friend Katrina, who goes to our gym, she stayed with us the whole weekend because Forrest was on National Guard duty the weekends, aside to military families. Shit always goes sideways when someone's deployed or someone's on, you know, guard duty. So thank you, military families. So she took care of us that weekend, and I had an MRI and had completely blown my C5-6 disc. So most of the time, disc herniations will happen at the backside. I had an anterior herniation because when we had hit, my head went back so forcefully, all of that disc fluid and pressure pressed anteriorly into the disc and completely blew out that whole disc wall. So I started having like numbness, tingling, and like weakness, and felt like cold running water on my right arm, like all the time. And so I tried PT, and I saw a neurosurgeon here, and he said, you know, no running, no jumping, no weightlifting. You can walk, you can ride a bike. And then I was doing PT, and it just wasn't getting any better. So March 1st, I had a cervical disc replacement, which I didn't even know. I knew that that was like a thing, but didn't know that it was like a viable thing. I thought I was looking at a cervical fusion, because normally they'll just go and take out the disc fragments and fuse the two segments together with rods and screws, and that's what that was going to happen. So I have an M6 artificial disc. It's made out of the same stuff that breast implants are made out of, so that's kind of cool. And then it's held together by titanium plates that basically, like, you know how sandpaper, like high, or I guess low grit sandpaper, can kind of stick to things. Mm-hmm. So it's like that. It just kind of sandpapered into the segment above and below. And then your bone, like, your body's so cool, your bone just kind of grows around that end plate, and then you have a new disc. And so that's what I have.
You're bionic.
I am bionic. Yes. Damn. Yes.
Wow. Yeah. Just thinking about the surgery, because they went in through the front of your neck.
Yeah. Right? They went in through the front.
That gives me the heebie-jeebies.
Uh-huh.
They did a nice little incision, which is looking pretty good. But then they take these little retractors that kind of look like salad tongs a little bit.
Mm. Now you're talking.
And they move your trachea and esophagus off to the midline, and then dissect out the anterior and anterior lateral neck muscles and just kind of separate everything and then go in through there. It's much better than a posterior approach, even though there's a lot of, like, really important stuff there. It's just easier for them to get to. The worst part, I think, was swallowing. I couldn't swallow very well for a couple weeks. I almost aspirated on a protein shake one night, and my husband was like, maybe you should slow down. So, yeah, that's pretty interesting.
So coming back from something like that, how does that affect you? Like, have your goals shifted? Are you like, I'm just going to get back to where I was as soon as possible? Has anything shifted? Or?
Well, I will say, in a word, it sucks. I guess that's two words. Especially when, like, I have worked really hard over the last couple of years to not be this way, but I think I've just inherently, like, I've grown up like this. I've been a competitive athlete almost my whole life. So a lot of my self-worth has been tied up in what I do as an athlete. And I'm trying to shift away from that. And I think this accident really made me reevaluate things that are important. I had a bruised spinal cord on top of everything else. And if I had not been in good shape and been strong, there is a high likelihood that I would have a C5 spinal cord injury. C4-5 controls your diaphragm, so I would be needing assistance to breathe if that had happened. So that was pretty eye-opening when I found that out. And I was like, okay, well, maybe Olympic weightlifting really isn't the priority at this point. As much as I love it. I'm a wife. I'm a mom. You know, I teach in a PT program. I have things that are more me than just lifting. So at this point, every single day since I got released back to exercise, every single day that I go into the gym, I have to make a conscious effort to kind of put myself in my place and remember that tomorrow will be 5 weeks. So I'm 5 weeks out of spine surgery.
Yeah.
If I'm just snatching an empty barbell, that's actually more than okay. That's pretty freaking awesome.
Right.
And, like, God gave me time. So I need to slow down and just take that time.
Yeah.
So yesterday I was able to do that. This morning, not so much. I was like, ooh, I'm going to try doing some cleans. And I did a few. And I was like, oh, this feels really good. So I put a little bit of weight on the bar. And by the time, I felt fine the whole time I was in the gym this morning. And then by the time I took our son to school and came home, I was like, oh, shit. Like, it's ticked off. This feels terrible. I'm now exhausted. And so I had to spend a solid hour after that just, like, getting my head right again. Because
mm-hmm.
I was like, I felt like I'd just taken 10 steps back, which happened. But,
yeah.
I think the hard part, I've had minor injuries. I was a collegiate athlete and stuff, and I've been playing sports my whole life, but I did have one major injury, which I'll bring up here soon, but even the minor injuries, it's like, the hard part is you knew your capabilities, and now those capabilities are, like, nil, right? So now you're trying to, like, navigate what are they now. And the only way, really, to do that is, like, to explore them. Right? And then you kind of can end up in a situation like you're talking about where some days you explore them a little too much.
Uh-huh. I love that. I just explored a little too much. I was adventurous today.
That's what I'm talking about.
Too adventurous.
A little too adventurous. But that's just part of the thing is, like, you got to, like, figure out where your edges are again, because you're, especially as a competitive athlete, you get a really clear picture of, like, where you're at with things, what your capacity is, what your strength is, what your blah, blah, blah is. And then all that's gone, and you kind of got to reframe your image of, like, what your capabilities are. And that's a hard, psychologically, a difficult thing to do.
I think if your goals are, like, competing and being the best, then it's hard to, it's more difficult to do that because you think, oh, I'm missing out on a training day today. That's going to put me behind this competition. Everyone else is getting better while I'm not getting better. And so it's really hard to, like, slow down and take the time you need. So, and that used to be my mindset too. Like, any kind of little injury, I'm like, oh, should I just work through it so I don't lose my fitness and I can still, like, put up good scores. But then, like, for me, I think it was when we had our first daughter, my shift went like, I wanted all the benefits from working out and being strong and being fit just so that I can, you know, be here for as long as possible kind of thing. But I'm not worried about being the best necessarily anymore. I'm just worried about, or all I worry about is like getting the stimulus and getting all the benefits.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like a big shift for me. It wasn't from injuries, but kind of what happened was I think I'm fitter now than I was 3 years ago because my motivations are maybe better to get into the gym. So
yeah.
I don't know. Has your goal shifted at all? Because I don't think there's anything wrong with being competitive necessarily. But
I think it's just that I think because I wrapped up so much of my identity in being the best and being a competitive athlete, and it happened, you know, at least within CrossFit, it kind of happened organically. You know, the first gym I started in, it came very naturally. I got really good really fast, and then I was beating everybody else in the gym. And then the next gym I went to, the same thing happened. And, you know, when Forrest and I met, he was coaching at a gym in downtown Phoenix, and the head coach there saw me work out, you know, with him one day, and then would introduce me as, like, this amazing athlete, and it used to really piss me off because I was like, dude, I am so much more than that.
Yeah.
But it just, that's just kind of how people started to know me.
Yeah.
And when I had our son, it was interesting. You find out who your friends are when stuff like this happens, because I found myself really alone after I had our son because I couldn't compete. I wasn't lifting. I had a C-section, so I had to wait a little bit longer. And it was like all those people who were my friends were not. They didn't have kids, and they were still competing, and we just didn't have the same interests. And so at that point, I wish I'd shifted my perspective a little bit, but I didn't. And with this injury, it has brought up a lot of things that I went through in that recovery too. And I think my goals now are just, you know, our son just turned 5. I want to be able to run with him while he rides a scooter outside. You know, I got cleared to be able to pick him up last week, which was amazing. Like, I hadn't picked up my son for almost 2 months, it felt like.
Yeah.
So things like that. And then, you know, Forrest was very concerned about my warmth this winter, so he purchased 5 cords of firewood, 2 of which are still in a giant pile that need to be put away. Because I was like they delivered it, and I was like, well, there's just this pile of wood in our front yard. And he was like, yeah, no one's going to come put it away. Here in New England, we do that stuff ourselves. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
So, like, old me would have been able to carry firewood in a wheelbarrow and, like, help my husband. And I couldn't do that, which is part of why it's still sitting there. Thank you, honey, for the wood that kept me warm all winter long. I appreciate that. So, like, little things like that, I didn't realize how important they were because I couldn't do them. And so, like, right after surgery, I wasn't supposed to bend over. I couldn't pick up anything heavier than 10 pounds. I didn't realize in my kitchen, I love to cook, everything that I needed with the exception of plates and cups was on the bottom, like, underneath all of, like, underneath our countertops. I had to, like, bend over for everything. I was like, I can't even pick up a pot at this point because I can't bend over. And my parents were here, and so I had to, you know, I'm 42 years old, and I'm having to ask my mom to help me put my shoes on, and can you please get this pot so I can make something for myself? And she's like, well, just let me make it for you. I'm like, no, I don't want you to make it for me. I want to do it myself. So just stepping back and letting people help you has been a big shift. And so that's my goal, is to be able to say, hey, I actually need help with this, rather than just trying to do it myself.
Yeah. Those, like, any injury, but specifically ones like that, that are a little more, you know, major, I'd say. It's like instant dose of humility, because you have to be like, I can't, you know, do everything myself.
And I think, can I shift towards women a little bit?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're very well versed, as you can tell.
I think that our society really kind of screws us as moms and women, because we're supposed to have a clean house and take care of our kids and take care of our husbands and have a job and do the laundry and, you know, not get fat and eat healthy food and like do and look nice and all these things. Well, it's exhausting. And so to be like, if you're used to doing that and then having something like this that truly is like debilitating, I was so happy to be able to fix my hair the first time. Like, I couldn't hold my arms up long enough to fix my hair.
Yeah.
Which, I'm sure it was fine, but it wasn't what I wanted it to be. And then I had to kind of go through this whole, well, is it what I want it to be or what I think other people are expecting? And so letting go of some of those expectations forces you, I think, to be more yourself. And that can be a little scary because it might be different than what other people have previously seen of you. And then, like, going back to fear and trauma, it's like, well, what if I'm then not accepted? So, like, with this injury, everybody in the gym knew me as, you know, the crazy girl over in the corner at 5:30 in the morning who's, like, doing all this insane stuff with my little coffee mug. And I was worried that if I couldn't do that, like, would I still have a community? Like, are they still going to like me if I can't do these things? Well, they you know, like, spoiler alert, they do.
yeah.
But I think that's part of what happens. And so, like, then you start, in terms of mindset, like, well, if I can't pick up my son when he's upset, am I failing as a mom? If I can't clean up the house, am I failing as a wife and a, you know, not a housekeeper, but you know what I mean?
Mm.
And it's really easy to spiral down into that message of failure rather than realizing that it's temporary and that there are people in your life who can help you. You just have to ask them.
Yeah.
And they will.
Yeah.
To your point, like, this is a... So I had one major injury when I was younger, and the reason I bring it up is it reminded me of this quote that I've heard before, and I think it's viable and is in line with what you're talking about. Is there's this quote that I don't know who said it, but every wound is a womb. And it's this idea of, like, it's always going to be an opportunity to, like, grow something, some new part of you, because you're going to be forced almost to let that part of you that was there before you were injured kind of die off in a way, or at least take a rest for some time. And in that downtime, there's time for new parts of you to, you know, grow and be exposed. And I grew up as a three sport athlete, and that was, like, you know, my whole childhood. I was just, like, doing sports. And then I took a paintball to the eye and I tore my iris, so I didn't get to play sports anymore, right, for at least it was like 4 or 5 year period. But in that time where I couldn't play sports is when I started finding music, and I learned guitar and I started writing music, and I got really into music. And then eventually I got to play sports again as I was, like, in high school and, you know, cleared medically and all that stuff. But that part of me that I grew while I wasn't able to do it stayed with me my whole life. So, like, I would have probably never even picked up a guitar had I not been shot in the eye with a paintball. Even though it sounds like a weird connection, it really is when I think back on it. Like, you know, that opportunity wouldn't even have been there. I wouldn't even have thought about doing it if I wasn't hurt, you know? And in a way I'm thankful, like, in retrospect, that I had to stop, you know, just being consumed with sports all the time. So now I have this whole other part of my life that's, like, you know, fulfilling. But that's, I think, applicable to any time you get injured. Is, like, it's a pause button, but it's also an opportunity for other stuff.
I actually found my opportunity writing. I used to love writing and being a researcher. Like, most of my writing is technical writing. And about a week after surgery, I was like, I actually miss writing, like, fiction or just stories or even, like, doing a blog post. And so I just sat down one day and decided I was going to start writing. And it was so great. And the next thing I knew, I had written for 2 hours, which was way too long to sit at a computer with my neck in the state that it was in. So that was another issue. But to your point, I agree. Like, if you, but you have to let go enough to let that opportunity come in. Otherwise, you're going to miss something. Like, can you imagine if you didn't have music?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's such a significant part of your life now, and it complements being an athlete. And, like, we're so much more than what we do in the gym.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, maybe you wouldn't, or I don't know how your musical connection with Liz got started, but
we wouldn't
know how that would have happened.
It was, yeah. We probably wouldn't even have met.
Yeah, it's weird thinking about. It's almost overwhelming when you think about little things or big things that happen in your life and how it affects.
Yeah, the domino
life.
Effect
yeah.
of trajectories and
it can be overwhelming. Like then you can put too much into every.
We're in a simulation,
moment,
man.
And yeah. Next episode, we'll talk about simulation theory.
Yeah.
Well, that's. I mean, that's why I'm. That's why I'm a PT.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's super cliched because there's so many therapists out there that were patients first. But like that was why I became a PT. I was like dead set on going to medical school, and I wanted to do trauma ortho, and you know just be married to the ER. And I had hurt my shoulder swimming, and I was in PT in my hometown, like home from college for break. And a kid that I had grown up with, he actually got hit by a car when we were 14. And it threw him 75 feet. He had a traumatic brain injury and a whole bunch of other things happened. And he finally came back to school when we were sophomores, but he was in a wheelchair. And so, you know, those last 3 years of high school, I knew Adam in a wheelchair. And here I was home, you know, my freshman year of college, going to PT for my shoulder. And I'm on the little arm bike, you know, warming up. And Adam is there in PT working with another therapist. And he apparently had been working on walking and got up out of his wheelchair and walked. I hadn't seen him walk since I was 14 years old. So I'm like bawling on the arm bike, like so happy. And I went back after that break and completely changed everything and decided to become a PT. My life would not be what it is had I not had that experience. So it was, you know, very similar, an opportunity as an injury that changed the whole trajectory of my life.
Mm-hmm. Silver linings if you look for them.
Yeah.
And just about everything.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Too bad we didn't get Coach Levi in here because he's about the most busted up person I've ever met.
He has lots of opportunities.
He's full, chock full of opportunities at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, and Sarah too. Like, I don't want to speak for her, but she, you know, it's been like 6 years where she's had a back injury, and same, she was kind of like very high level athlete, like, you know, constantly putting up the best scores in the gym type of deal, and in the area, and then just, yeah, her back just took her out of that. And so that identity piece of like, oh, this, you know, she's a badass athlete and that's how everybody knows her. And so, yeah, shifting from that, I could see in her how hard that is, you know?
Well, I think we kind of do it to ourselves a little bit, but I think our society perpetuates it.
Mm, I was just going to say that. It's hard because it's rewarded.
Yeah.
Like socially,
yeah.
Like you get like this dopamine hit when you like perform well.
Yeah.
Right. But then you get addicted to the performance being good.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And people are trying to be, it's not like they have negative intentions. Like they like to see people succeed and that's great. But, but yeah, if that's kind of all you're known for, it can be tough if you lose that. Like, yeah, you know.
Well, think about Annie Thor's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
She, I don't know her personally. I think she's amazing. I've loved her since her first muscle up in 2009 at the range.
Yeah.
I think. She had an okay pregnancy, and was trying to, you know, get back in shape, and had severe postpartum depression. And then, you know, a year after her daughter was born, she's at the game snatching 200 pounds, which is amazing. But all, like, it felt to me like the focus, like the CrossFit focus was, you know, look at Annie postpartum 1 year snatching 200 pounds. And they didn't talk about the journey that it took for her to get to that point.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it's amazing that she did that, but I think it's more amazing that she created a human,
right?
Yeah.
And was able, like, had the support and was able to work through postpartum depression and then return to that level of competition.
Right.
Like, snatching 200 pounds, it's like, okay, that's cute. That's like when people get their first muscle up, like, I don't want to bag on first muscle ups because I remember what mine felt like, but it's like the CrossFit unicorn, and a ring muscle up to me is less significant than a bar muscle up because I can actually use a bar muscle up to save my life.
Mm-hmm.
If I need to, like, there's not going to be rings when someone's chasing me probably, but there might be a high wall that I need to scale and get up and over.
Right.
So in terms of like general physical preparedness, I think that's great. But we make these things out to be this like huge celebratory thing, which they are in their own way. But let's talk, like, let's celebrate the journey that it took that person to get to that point.
Mm. And I think in our community, well, I know I do this hopefully as a coach. I try to at least is set a culture and exemplify a culture, hopefully, or an example of, like, I'm going to celebrate somebody who maybe doesn't have the best score in class, but they're the best, you know, community member. They're supportive. They're every day they walk in, they're positive and they're coachable. Like, they're on time for class and they're nice to other people in class. Like, that person's going to get a lot more praise from me than somebody who's like a badass athlete who's kind of shitty. And I think if the coach, you made this mention earlier and I wanted to say something, but I didn't, was like, the coach would introduce you as like, oh, she's a badass. Like, she can, you know, she has like a 2-minute Fran time or whatever. It's like, maybe they should be like, oh, like, you know, she's super nice, like very coachable. She's worked really hard to like make all this progress. Like that,
right.
That's more indicative of who you are and your character and stuff. And not so much just like the, you know, accolades of your movements and your scores and that type of stuff. So I think just in general, it's like a lot of times in the CrossFit affiliates, it comes from the coaches and what the, where the praise is being given and for what, you know, and that kind of sets like the community identity in a way where I've been to, my first gym was like the opposite, where it's like the people who were the most looked up to were the ones who could do the most muscle ups and the heaviest squats. And like, honestly, some of those dudes were like douchebags. And I was like, I'm going to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Because like, this is not so chill.
There's a good example of that, like with me, we did a muscle up clinic and, you know, a couple people got their first muscle ups and it was awesome and that's exciting. But then, like a couple days later, there were these two women in class. One of them had to modify air squats on day one because hip stuff. And one of them just could barely perform any type of Olympic lift or front squat, any kind of squat really. And they were like both repping out hang squat cleans. And I had like with the muscle up, it was like, this is cool, high five. But with them, it was like, gave me chills and goosebumps. I was like, oh my gosh, these people have like changed their lives. Like their bodies are completely different.
Yeah.
Like they are moving well, they're healthier. Like that stuff made me, like I took videos of it and I was like, this is crazy, you know?
Yeah.
So I gotta talk about my friend Amy, cause I hope she listens to this. When we lived in Prescott, our friend has, he owns CrossFit, a Red Tail CrossFit, and he and Forrest coached together at Captain CrossFit, which was Lauren, Greg's ex-wife. It was her gym for a while.
Okay.
And so Tony broke off, and he opened his own gym, and I met this girl, Amy, when we lived there, and I used to go in. This was when I was just Olympic lifting, so I would go in a couple of days a week and do kind of what I do now. I was just over in the corner doing my own little thing. And she and I got to be friends, and she had just started CrossFit and was like super just kind of anxious and unsure. Like I remember when she was scared to like get under 55 pounds, you know, and was like, did I do that right? Like she was just, you know, the overthinkers.
Yeah.
It was totally her. We, you know, were friends off and on. And then when we moved down to Phoenix and I found the gym that we were in there, I walked in one day and she was there and I was like, oh my gosh, what are you doing here? And she had moved down to Phoenix as well. She is now an amazing Masters Olympic weightlifter and, you know, got second place at Worlds. And I love watching her lift because I remember when she was scared of 55 pounds, and here she is, you know, just killing it. And it's so inspiring, and that's such, as a coach, that's such an amazing feeling. Like,
right.
Again, muscle up, that's great, but you've changed your movement and,
yeah.
you know, put in the work. Like, this was, she and I met in 2015, so this is, you know, coming up on 8 years of work that she's been doing. That's amazing for people to stick with it that long.
Right.
And she's had injuries, she's had life stuff happen, she's the mom of a teenager, so I don't even know what that entails yet. But, you know, she handles all of that, and she's a PACU nurse, so she's just busy.
Yeah.
And she makes time to get into the gym every day. She's consistent, and she's kind.
Mm.
You know, in that gym, she's one of the people who will be the first one to say hi to you, congratulate you. You know, she shows up when we were all, you know, training like crazy last year, and we were doing quarterfinal workouts. You know, she was there. She was judging. She was videoing. She was coaching. I mean, like, whatever you needed Amy to do, she does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like a dream. We should be wrapping up here soon, huh? But it is like a dream as a coach or as somebody who works in a gym, is like when the good or the really proficient athletes are also the really good people in your community. Like, then it's like, you know, then you have like the best of both worlds, you know? And I don't know. I think we do a decent job of that here.
Yeah, I think we have a really, really good group of people, whether you're crazy good athlete or just starting out. Like, that is what matters most, you know. I think it can go hand in hand with the better athlete you become, the better person you become. And that's on an individual level, though. It's not to say like someone that's more fit is better, but like,
yeah, just the journey.
Made, yeah, if you've made a big journey, like if your journey was big and you made some big changes, like, chances are stuff happened between the ears also.
Right.
I think one of the things that CrossFit does better than anybody else, doesn't matter, most of, well, I shouldn't say it doesn't matter what affiliate you go to, because we just said that some affiliates are
there's a couple of
them. There's a couple other. Poor guys. Maybe they'll listen.
Likely not.
you get community.
Right.
And there's a new book that I just started reading called The Good Life, and it's about this. It's the longest running study, I think, in the United States up to this point. And it's on like year 85, and it's out of Harvard, just down the road. And these guys took a group of people from the best neighborhoods in Boston and a group of people from the worst neighborhoods in Boston and tracked them and their offspring over the last 85 years. And what their research has shown them is that the people who have the greatest longevity and quality of life are people who have community. So there's no benefit in isolation. And I think when you're injured, the last thing that you should do is sit on your ass on your couch and sit there and feel sorry for yourself,
mm.
which I worked through for an hour this morning.
Mm-hmm.
But I had my community this morning. I have my husband. We did this. Like, I already feel better.
Yeah.
And that will heal you. So even if you can't, you know, if you look at the program and you're like, okay, well, you know, doing strict press hurts today, ask coach, what can I do instead? Get your ass into the gym, get with your community, and keep moving, because motion is lotion and your community is going to save you.
Amen.
And the more you move, and here's my nasty little green juice, we'll plug this guy because people, I mean, he's just a zinger.
Slime.
Eat clean, be with your community, get your blood flowing, you're going to heal really, really well.
Yeah.
And you'll come back even better than you probably were before.
Yeah.
All right. Amen.
Cool.
Thank you for sharing.
Yeah,
yeah,
thanks for having me. It was really fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think people will take a lot from this episode.
I hope so.
Yeah. And we always get feedback too of like questions and further, you know, comments. So maybe in the future we could all reconvene and dig deeper into some other parts of this.
I'd love that.
Yeah. And see, injury isn't the end. Like, a lot of people see injury and they think it's the end. So if we reconvene, we'll show how you've reworked, and we'll see where you're at next time, which I'm sure will be in a good spot.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thank you.